Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I hope everybody had a lovely, just before the holidays, kind of a weekend. They can get kind of crazy, and I hope you are taking into consideration that, you know, it's a lot of work, and you got to take it a day at a time, and you can't get stressed over all the stuff that's going on this time of year. I want to talk about something that's very close to my heart today. I'm sure most of you have read about it or heard about it. It's a story about a young woman named Jessica Chambers in Mississippi. And not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before, I believe the date was the 6th. She was out, stopped at a gas station, had been at a party. Nobody really knows where she was headed after the gas station. But when, I don't know what the time situation was, how long it took her from get from the gas station to when what took place happened, but she's on video at a gas station, and then the next thing you know, she's beside her car on a road, and she's been set on fire. Now, most of you know that these kind of subjects are pretty close to my heart because of my grandson, Michael. I'm going to bring Shelley in so that we can move into this story and discuss a little bit about what I know about burns firsthand. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Yeah, and I did not hear about this story. That's disturbing. This happened a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a week ago this past Saturday, the 6th, I believe,
oh,
was
wow.
The date. Yeah.
Did she survive?
No, but she was alive when they found her, which is almost the most disheartening part for me.
Oh, my God.
Because I can't even imagine, you know, having been with Michael after the fact, after all those weeks of being sedated and everything, the pain was still so incredibly intense when he started being brought out of the induced coma that I can't even, I'm almost glad that most people don't know that or don't understand that or have never seen, well, I am glad nobody's ever seen it or a lot of people haven't seen it, but she apparently whispered something to the policeman that found her, but that hasn't been brought to light as yet.
Wow. So there are no details as to, like, who did this to her or why or anything like that yet?
Not really, but I do have a story I want to share. It was from somebody that was the first responder. And apparently there's some DNA evidence which may help us. But, of course, none of that stuff is being released yet. But there's a story on the Internet that is first responder tries to comfort burning victim before her death. And in the wake of a heinous murder, family, friends, and investigators are trying to piece together the events that led to the death of 19-year-old Jessica Chambers. And there was a party going on, and she had been at the party, said Chambers. An acquaintance of hers, Charlotte Wilkerson, said that when she left the party, that's when it happened to her. District Attorney John Champion says investigators are looking into what, if anything, the party had to do with Chambers' death. The teenager was discovered next to her car on a rural, can't even say that word this morning, road in Panola County near Cortland, Mississippi on Saturday night. We were expecting it to be a normal car fire, recalled Chief Cole Haley of the Cortland Fire Department. Put it out, extinguish it, and be done with it. But to the Cortland Fire Chief's horror, He saw Jessica Chambers lying next to her burning car. I realized who the victim was, and it was just shocking. I hate it for the family. Investigators say someone poured an accelerant on Chambers and set her on fire, which is exactly what happened to my grandson. Chief Haley said she whispered some words to him. Many believe this utterance may be the name of her attacker. I can't disclose any of that information at this time, said Haley. Investigators will only say several people have been questioned. There is surveillance video of Chambers at a convenience store near her home a couple of hours before she died. Panola County deputies watched it and shot video of at least an hour of it, paying attention to any people who walked in and out of the store. The man seen in the video getting gas in a separate container was cleared. Investigators say the gas was for a generator. Champion says the judge signed an order so investigators can get Chambers' phone records. He expects to receive those Wednesday. Champion also says this crime does not appear to be random. No one is in custody. People in Panola County still can't believe this has happened. She was 19 years old. I've known her forever. This is the chief of police. So there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of sad, sad stories. Her sister bought her an ID necklace for Christmas, and now she's going to take it to the gravesite. I mean, horrible stories. But I guess the reason I wanted to talk about it, of course, is because of Michael. And I think that when we talk about horrific, horrific crimes, this has to be in the top three. If you've ever burnt your finger on the stove, if you've ever reached across the iron and hit your arm, if you've ever reached into the oven to pull out a roast or a cake or anything like that and lifted up too high and hit your forearm on the top of the oven, burns hurt like hell.
Yep.
I mean, there, you know.
It's not a normal pain. There's an intensity of it. I did exactly what you just said. That's what I was going to say before. When we were doing Thanksgiving dinner, I burned my forearm, you know, and it was about maybe 2.5 inches long and about 1/2 inch wide. And it just, like you said, it was intense, and the pain hurt all the way up to my elbow. And I'm looking at it, and, you know, because of my closeness to the family and to Mikey and everything, when I injure myself like that, I always think of him. And it's like, oh, my God. And it's like I'm almost embarrassed to even complain about it. I never even said anything to anybody about it because it was like, you know, big freaking deal. But I couldn't get over the intensity of what a burn feels like on a little tiny patch of your skin. And we're talking people where it's covering, you know, the majority of their body. It's incomprehensible.
Well, and then, you know, which is another totally horrific, egregious thing that takes place, is that some people watch. I mean, it's not just the act, but there's the opportunity to make it not so awful, and they choose to observe. I stood up in court, and when the judge said, does any of the family want to say anything? And I said, yes. And I stood up, and I said, even if these boys just let daredevil, I bet I can and you can't kind of mindset get away from them that day, the worst part is nobody tried to help him. And this young woman, obviously, they did it to kill her. Now, see, I don't think the boys that set Mike on fire, I just think that that snowballed into what it turned out to be. But to intend to burn somebody alive? Shelley, can you think of anything more horrendous, or what kind of a mind went there?
It goes to serial killer mentality, I'm sorry, because serial killers, one of the reasons they do that is because there's something about the suffering of another individual, seeing that intense fear and physical pain that somehow excites them. And it's an aberration of our sensitivities. It's an aberration of how the mind works. And it's evil in nature. I don't understand. I mean, and think of all the serial killers that have been throughout history. Think of the ones that have been caught recently. You know, I don't know what brings about that kind of mental aberration. But when you take pleasure in watching someone suffer and suffer that intensely, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, screwing with somebody's life and making them unhappy. I'm talking about causing them mortal pain, pain that they're going to eventually die from, but not even letting them die quickly. You know, so it's not even murder. It's like the suffering is what they're going for, the intense suffering. You know, you want to kill somebody, you shoot them in the head, bam, they're done. It's 2 seconds, you know. But this type of murder, when somebody's poisoned, when somebody's set on fire, when somebody's tortured, that person is going for suffering, not for death. And so that's something way wrong with the person.
This is even more involved. I almost feel like, well, the first story I read talks about the fact that it wasn't random, because of some of the things that were done. You see major evil intent. I'm going to read one more story, and if somebody's listening and they can't deal with information like this, please don't listen. Go to something else and come back for tomorrow's show. But I want to say this because I want everybody to understand that some of what took place with this young woman was even worse than what it sounds like from the beginning. Family members of the teenager burned alive on Saturday night are desperate for answers in the heinous Mississippi murder. Jessica Chambers, 19, was found burning near her car that was also engulfed in flames. She was flown to a hospital in Memphis but later died. Early autopsy results revealed that Jessica died from severe burns that covered 98% of her body. "They have ripped everything I have," added Lisa Chambers, Jessica's mom. She left to go clean out her car and was going to get her something to eat. The 19-year-old never made it home. Her father, Ben Chambers, said the investigators told him his daughter was set on fire. "When the fire department got there, she was walking down the road on fire," he said. "Only part of her body that wasn't burned was the bottom of her feet." He continued as he held back tears. "They squirted lighter fluid down her throat and in her nose, and apparently they knocked her out because she had a big gash on top of her head. In her last breath, she may have sent investigators down her killer's trail. She told them who done it," Chambers said. Investigators won't say what Jessica said or release the chilling details about how she died. "I love her, you know. I'm sorry Daddy wasn't there for her," her dad said. "I'd trade places with her in a minute if I could." Ben Chambers worked as an employee of the Panola County Sheriff's Office. He has faith that his friends and coworkers will get to the bottom of this crime. Her parents are not the only people left wondering who could do something so violent. Several people in town are taking to Facebook asking for justice for Jessica. Friends like Alicia Falker are taking to social media to demand answers, gaining more than 7,000 likes in less than a day. For her, if she was here to know all these people cared about her, we just want the story out there. Assistant District Attorney Jay Hale knows someone in the community knows something and is pleading for help. Detectives are working to learn who the 19-year-old may have been with before her murder. "We're trying to go through the information that we have, certainly interviewing all the potential witnesses we can find, and going through and using the phone records we can. The sheriff called me this morning. He told me, I'm working hard. They took something from me I can't ever get back, not ever. You know, it's part of me gone forever. That's the dad. Jessica's mother hopes for a tip that could lead to her daughter's killer or killers. Even if they don't think it's information, it's just something they heard, to please call the sheriff's department, Lisa Chambers said. Several people are being questioned by detectives, but no arrests have been made. The teen's car and any potential clues inside are charred black. Investigators did find a cell phone at the scene. We do have a phone that we believe is hers, and that is what we're attempting to gather the information from. Jessica Chambers' visitation is scheduled for Friday from 5 to 8 at Wells Funeral Home in Batesville, Mississippi. She will be laid to rest at the chapel on Saturday at 2 p.m. As Lisa Chambers prepares to bury her daughter, she has just one question for whomever is responsible. Why? How could you like for it to be... How would you like for it to be done to you, your daughter, your mother, your father, someone in your family? That's the end of that story. lots of comments, lots of indignant reactions. I was, you know, blown away. We were blown away by the things that... that people did for my grandson and the people. I'm reminded after something I just said a few minutes ago about how a little burn hurts. I'm reminded of sitting in the waiting room at Jackson Memorial by myself, and Mike and Val were meeting with one of the hospital, like a ombudsman at the hospital. So I'm sitting out in the waiting room and waiting for them to call and say that it's okay for me to come in again in the Rider Trauma Center. And these two ladies walk in, and I'm the only one in this huge waiting room at Jackson Memorial, and the one lady looks at me and she said, "You're Mikey's grandmother, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "I was home, and I saw this on TV, and I was ironing, and I reached across to unplug the iron and hit my arm on the iron. And I have this little tiny burn on my arm, on the underneath of my arm." And she said, "It hurt so bad that I just finished watching what happened to your grandson, so we had to come over to the hospital." They had a big basket of fruit in their hands, and they both hugged me, and they said, we don't get this." And, of course, there were so many people who did things like that, but... The story of these two ladies making their way over, and if you've never been to Miami in the Jackson Memorial Complex, there's Sylvester Clinic, there's the VA Hospital, there's Joe DiMaggio's Hospital. It's a town all by itself. It's not easy to come to or drive through or find your way to. It's really, really, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like being in the heart of New York City, in this part of Miami. And these two ladies, just because she burnt her arm on the iron, had to come over right that minute. So, you know, along with all the sadness and the hatred and the violence that we have, we know that there's hope for us because there's people like them and people like all the other people that rallied when Mike got hurt. This family, my heart goes out to them, and I can't, there isn't any kind of words you can say that bring any kind of comfort, obviously. But it will be interesting, I don't even like using that word, not interesting. It will be wonderful if we find out who did this and that they meet their maker with that printed on the front of their forehead, right?
Yeah, I hope that what she said to the responding officer is in fact going to lead to the capture of this is So they're not saying whether or not this was a single individual or a group?
No, I know. No, they aren't sure whether it was or not. I don't know that one person...
How they accelerate down her throat.
Right.
Unless you had two people involved, or unless at that point she was already knocked out and then the accelerant was put there.
Yeah, that's the same reaction I had. Either somebody was holding her down, but of course there was only a couple stories that told about the gash on her head, but that could have happened after she got set on fire. She could have fallen herself. And then some of the stories, as I read, say that she was beside the car, laying beside the car. And then what the police told the dad, and the dad may have told this story because it was what was said to him, and maybe the official story played it down a little bit. I mean, one is horrific. The other one is, I mean, just seeing somebody walk down the street on fire is kind of like, I don't know, like out of a Criminal Minds show or something. So I don't know which one really took place, but you'll see as you go through the stories, you'll see there's several differences in the way she was found. Either way is horrific, but one is a little bit more dramatic than the other. And the fact that she was still lucid doesn't make me feel any better either.
Well, see, and that's what makes me think that the head injury was from falling or from flailing around from the fire, because if she had been knocked out and then set on fire, she more than likely would have, I don't know that that would have revived her. You'd think she would suffocate and not regain consciousness, especially if it was down her throat. So I was trying to look for some saying this all happened to her while she was unconscious, but if she was lucid when they got there, then... And there's no solace to be taken in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that is kind of amazing, of course, survival. I mean, look at Mike. Mike was fully engulfed in flames, fully engulfed. And the young woman who came out and was on the phone and was the recording that they kept playing that none of the family would listen to, but I listened to it that day in court and will probably never, ever, ever, ever forget it. She said to her boyfriend, or he said, come look. I don't know what's going on. She looks and goes running out the front door. She sees Michael running on fire and jumping over the wall and going into the swimming pool. And then the boyfriend and she got to the pool, she's on 911, and this is part of the tape that you're hearing, and you're hearing Mike just screaming and screaming in the background. It was horrible. And
I know, I listened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was something... anybody who loves anybody else, no matter who it is, doesn't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And when Mike tried to get himself, you know, his hands were burnt, his fingers were burnt, but not the palm of his hand and not the very bottom of his feet. So I don't know what the deal is with that, whether there's a difference in the skin or what the deal is, but I mean... If one story says she was laying down and one story says she was walking, or maybe just the protection of shoes, I don't know. But Mike, the bottom of Mike's feet were not burnt, and the palms of his hands. Now, his fingers, in the days to come, we could be in there, and one day his fingers would look like they were healing, and the next day we'd walk in. Have you ever burnt a marshmallow when you're roasting a marshmallow?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, caught it on fire and had it burn.
Right.
That's what Mike's fingers would look like some days when we'd go in. They'd be all black and crispy. And then that would go away. And then the next day, like 3 or 4 days later, when we'd go back in, they would look like they were healing. And then the tissue under the topical burn has like some kind of a memory or something and keeps burning. The cells keep burning. That's one of the dangers of being burnt so intensively, and when the accelerant is used, that is increased.
So how did they even find out about this? I mean, did somebody pass?
Somebody
the car
reported
or
a burning car. Somebody reported a burning car.
Oh my God, she was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the time lag between her being filmed at the convenience store and being found burning? What's the time?
I want to say that was like 2 hours. Something along those lines. It says, this story didn't have gas station surveillance video captures her. Her last hour. So just an hour before the car was reported. So somebody must have stopped her, flagged her down, and then it happened. And the other thing is, I mean, you and I are not Columbo, but we've certainly read enough of these stories and watched enough of this kind of stuff. I think that most people at a certain time of night wouldn't just stop for just anybody. I think a lot of people would only stop if it was somebody they knew. What do you think?
A couple of thoughts. It was, she either stopped because it was somebody she knew, or she might have been run off the road, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they torched the car. Maybe they're trying to torch any evidence of the impact between the two vehicles. It's hard to say, you know. I think those are really the only two scenarios. You're either going to stop for a cop, you're going to stop because it's somebody you know and they're flagging you over, or you get run off the road. So I don't know if anything like that might come out. If they're going to, once they look at the remains of the car, if they see that there's any damage, like another vehicle impacted her car and forced her, you know, they might look at skid marks, because this is all at night now. In the daytime, they're going to be looking at the crime scene, and they're going to see if maybe there's skid marks. Was she forced off the road? Or was this something where she pulled over because she thought it was a friendly stop? So it's very disturbing. Very disturbing.
Excuse me. Yes, it is. And it's a small town. So the other thing that might be good for the family is, because it's a small town and people have a tough time keeping secrets like that, not too many people could live with that secret, do you think?
Anybody knowing who did it would have a hard time keeping it, but the person who perpetrated it, they don't have a normal moral structure to begin with, so I don't know that they would have any difficulty at all keeping that a secret. People that commit vicious crimes like that, vicious murders, generally have no moral compass to begin with. They have no conscience. Things aren't going to be eating away at them. But if anybody close to them saw any signs that this person was involved in something violent or something criminal, a lot of times they're the ones that get antsy, and they can't seem to hold on to that information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've watched that show Cold Justice, and and that's usually what happens. Usually the person that they suspect of being the murderer has zero conscience. They don't really get a lot of confessions. These people will maintain their story and act upright and, like they didn't do anything wrong or whatever, but it's usually the people in their close circle that start breaking down and having issues with telling the same story over and over again. They start weakening, or they start coming up with new facts. But unless it was an accidental murder or murder in a passionate moment, those type of people a lot of times will feel remorse. I don't think this is a passionate murder. This is something that is just evil. There's nothing passionate about this. That took time to do. That took time to douse everything with accelerant. That took time to shove it down her throat. That's not passion. That's not in the heat of the moment where somebody might feel regret this was just an evil, evil act. And somebody like that, I don't believe, has the capacity to break down and want to tell on themselves.
Well, do you think it would surprise us to find out that because they poured the accelerant down her throat, that they're punishing her for something she said?
I don't know. It could be that symbolic. I'm not sure.
They yeah, might want I'm to not either.
Sure tried because you hear of a lot of burn victims that survived. Maybe they were just ensuring that she wouldn't survive this. But again,
Let me ask another question. First of all, the setting on fire itself and the setting on fire of the car, and I mean, they have to know that that's going to draw attention if they can think at all. The fact that they weren't sure that the burns, that the fire on the outside of her body was going to be enough to take her life. And maybe they're so young that they thought that pouring it down her throat would somehow, you know, ensure this killing her. I'm trying to figure out why they would pour it down her nose and her throat. I'm trying to figure out what kind of a mind, after the heinous crime to begin with, setting her on fire and setting her vehicle on fire, what was the premise of pouring it down her throat? Or maybe they did that first. I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's possible. I mean, what about people that use poison? What about people that pour lye down somebody's throat? I mean, that's the most excruciating way to die. I mean, what is the point of that? And a lot of times that's done by random. You get these people. I forgot what the story was. It was a true story. This was, I'm trying to think what show I saw it on. But I don't know if it was a bank robbery or because this person did it to multiple people. I think it was a bank robbery, and they had all the people tied up on the floor, and they didn't want any witnesses, and they went around and they poured lye down everybody's throat. And one woman survived, and, like, everybody died. So it's like, why don't you just put a bullet in their head, for God's sake? I mean, why, if you're going to kill them anyway, why don't you just kill them instead of you having all these people writhing around for hours dying? And that's an excruciating way to die. And the one woman, she can't even eat normally. She has to have a food bag or something attached to her. She was the only one that survived. But they did that to kill everybody. And it's like, oh, my God, why not just put a bullet in their head? If you're going to kill them anyway, why do it that way? So
it's symbolic in some way. That's what I'm saying. Usually, I mean,
yeah, but there wasn't anything symbolic about that. It was just an extremely cruel person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't symbolic unless in this particular case, this criminal didn't know these people. They were complete. That was just how he chose to kill them. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Why kill somebody that way? There wasn't anything symbolic there. And a lot of times, unless it is being done for revenge, which we don't know yet, unless
right.
it's being done for revenge, then it's symbolic. But I can't even imagine what the reasoning would be at this point. If it is revenge, if it's somebody, what's even more disturbing to me is if this wasn't somebody she knew, and this is somebody that
randomly?
Yeah, random. That would make it even more disturbing. Actually,
yeah.
I don't know which is disturbing, whether it's random or somebody she knew. If it's, I guess it would be more disturbing if it's random because that means that this person might be doing it again. Maybe it's something like a serial killer type of an action. But in any event, even if it was somebody that she knew and it was done for revenge, it's I don't think that people like that are rehabilitatable. I don't think you can commit an act that violent, that deliberately cruel, that heartless, and go through counseling and come back from it. I think that means there's something permanently wrong with your brain if you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with that. And, like I said, though, that's there was so much controversy over the boys that did this to Michael about, you know, why they went to that extreme. And of course, as I said, I thought it came to light without any question, the fact that it just snowballed into something different. I think, as a matter of fact, the discussion originally was that they just wanted him to walk with the accelerant on him, walk home and smell like, you know, this alcohol or whatever the accelerant was, because that never really was proven either, and thought that that would be amusing. And then the one boy in the, you know, in the mind of a 16-year-old lit the lighter. And even then, it wouldn't surprise me if someplace in his head he just thought he'd start his jacket on fire and Mike would be able to slap it out. Who knows what they're thinking when they're doing something like this. But this,
I don't think their intent was murder.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think that, and again, I'm very critical of a lot of the games that are out. I think that a lot of young people, because of the desensitization caused by a lot of horror movies and video games, they don't look at mortality like somebody maybe 50 years ago. It's they've almost been desensitized to violence and pain and stuff like that, where they don't see it as a reality. Because everybody in the game, you know, powers back up again. And, you know, although on one hand they know if you take a gun and you shoot somebody in the head, they die, for some reason they don't have a connection to that. They don't, you know what I'm saying? It's absurd, but I've heard how some kids that are in gangs and stuff talk, and they really have a lack of connection with what death really means and how permanent and final it is. So, yeah, so I'm not so sure that they were actually trying to end Michael's life. I think they were trying to teach him a lesson without realizing that what they were doing could have mortal consequences.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, does anybody, when they're caught up in a mourning or in a position that's already started to take over, I don't know. I read so many stories, and I've looked so much at some of the stuff that we've seen online. And last week we talked about the horrific treatment of that kid, and all the other things that people do with great intent. I mean, it's not accidents to take a 10-year-old and hide them in the wall for years. It's not accidents to slam a baby against a wall. All these things are done with intent. But when you read stories like this, and it's, I don't know, it's just like out of the blue. I mean, maybe we'll find out at some point in time that Jessica was being harassed by somebody in school. Or, well, I guess she's not in school anymore, she's 19, or in her social circle. Small town, that's what I mean when I say, you know, it's hard for people to keep their mouth shut because this is so big. Not necessarily the perpetrator, but usually perpetrators share with somebody. It's a big secret, but they can't wait to tell somebody, because they're going to explode if they don't
tell. Or somebody saw somebody coming home with clothes that they threw out. Because sometimes on some of these shows, that's how these people are caught. Because somebody saw somebody coming back with, like, bloody clothes, and they saw them set them on fire or throw them out in the garbage. And then, you know, 10 years later, they're telling this to the police. But at the time, they didn't say it to anybody because maybe they were afraid of the person. And now this person has moved on out of their lives. Now all of a sudden they say, well, you know, that night I did see something strange. So-and-so came home, and, you know, they had all these clothes, and they were covered with blood, and I saw them set them on fire in the backyard, and, you know. And then all of a sudden these details come out. I've seen a couple like that where a decade later this person is no longer a threat to the witness, and then all of a sudden the witness comes up with information that clinches the case for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But
hope something along those lines is going to happen. I will be very interested to see. I just perused again real quick just to see, because the last real story was on the 12th, which was 3 days ago. Would have been Friday. So today's Monday. So I'll keep an eye on that, and we'll see if, you know, if they come to any kind of a conclusion. But the other thing that I wanted to mention about burns, like I said, the continuum of burning of cells is another part of this awful story, because even when they airlifted Michael and sedated him and got him on life support and everything, from that instant when we saw him at 2 a.m. to the next day, the body changes were tremendous.
Yep,
and in the days
that.
To come, you know, in the days to come, it was usually if we were met by a nurse at the doors, we knew that we were going to be in for another not very nice surprise. So if a nurse greeted us, she'd usually say, now, this is normal. Everything is just changing because, you know, he's going through it and he's healing. He's not any worse. He's not any better, but, you know, he looks different. And we'd walk in, and sometimes it was devastating. So the other part that I'd like to mention, because I decided to do this story today, and I haven't talked too much about this because there's still legal things going on, but I do want to say that when somebody is hurt to this degree, like this young woman who succumbed to it, like the woman who whose whole face was torn off by the monkey, you remember that a few years ago, and she's been on talk shows, and they've redone her face. And years ago, I met a man. His name was Paul. He used to come in the restaurant I worked in. And he had had a battery explode in his face, and he was horribly scarred. His whole head was scarred. He had no ears, things like that. Many people rise above, and many people move on with their lives when they're hurt this badly. We've seen proof of that. I think everybody probably has a story. What I want to bring to light, though, is the scars that you don't see. And the scars that you don't see are often much more difficult to deal with, much more difficult to erase, much more difficult to live with, period. And when you go through what my grandson went through, it's hard to just be, I don't know, I hate to use the word normal because I'm not sure anymore what normal is, but it's hard to be just, you know, in the flow, okay, like everybody else, and stay there. Because everything has deeper meaning, especially the difficult things. They all have deeper meaning. So it adjusts that person's life to be totally unlike who they started out to be.
Exactly.
My, you know, and I don't, I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is because it appears to me with the public that the public doesn't seem to get that. That they think once somebody makes it through something like that and survives it, and they have the use of their limbs, and they can walk and everything, and thank God all that stuff came to be all right, then they're okay. And there's no question about them being okay. Because, again, we are so visual. And every time somebody says to me, I saw your grandson, he looks wonderful, I say, yes, he's still a beautiful young man. He's got this big smile, these big blue eyes and everything. And I want to say, to them, I don't ever say this, but I want to say, did you notice all the scars? And, of course, sometimes I think they would say, yeah, you know, he didn't have his shirt on. And but really what I'm asking is, does it bother you that you can see all those horrible scars on his skin? Do you ever wonder what's on the inside?
That's right. And the whole thing is that that's why things like what Arabella helped you with
yes.
is so important for anybody listening that knows somebody suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And PTSD is not just for people in the military service. It's any sort of trauma, post-traumatic, that's what it stands for, post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's for someone who was the victim of a crime, a rape victim, somebody who might have been in a violent car accident, somebody who had a fall, like say a skiing accident, anything that where their life, the moment before this incident happened, was going along one way, and then because of this intervening incident, their life has been changed forever. There's usually some sort of physical injury involved in that, sometimes like that young woman who lost her arm in the shard attack, okay?
Yeah.
Now,
mm.
she acts like there's no trauma there anymore. I don't know if she has nightmares. When you see her on TV, she seems to be totally back in her life. I don't know if she went through any counseling to get there. I think there was a movie made about her life. I didn't watch it,
yeah.
though. So I don't
yeah.
know what her recovery was like. You know, I'm sure it was a journey for her. You know, but there you have somebody that's been permanently changed, and yet she's not. She didn't let it. She's not skipping a beat. She's going on with her life. But there are other people that suffer permanent injuries like that, being crippled, losing a limb, being scarred, especially on their face or something like that. And there's something called mind sonar. A friend of mine, Adabel Prince, is brilliant at this. And what the psychological approach does is it does not use pharmaceutical drugs. It does not use psychiatry. It does not use it doesn't even use psychotherapy. What it does
no.
is it utilizes how the brain stores memories, especially traumatic memories, because traumatic memories are attached to pictures, to images. That's how our brains, and when you study the brain and you understand, the brain records things in images. If you can separate the trauma from the images, so you don't lose your memory, you don't forget that this thing happened, but what mind sonar does is it separates the trauma from the image so that you no longer have the image in your head anymore. You don't lose your memory that something happened. Like you can say, okay, I know this happened to me on April 13th, but
mm-hmm.
there's no emotional connection to that incident anymore. You don't feel the fear, you don't feel that trauma, and what it does is it allows you to go forward in life without reliving the trauma that caused you, because trauma that doesn't get dealt with can cause anxiety, fear, paranoia, depression, anger. I mean, it eats you, literally eats you alive, and that's what you saw happening to your grandson for a while there. He was
mm-hmm.
literally being emotionally destroyed by the memories and the flashbacks of what happened that day. And I believe he was very much helped by that session.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and you know, I look at it like lessening the heartache. It lessens the heartache because it's hard. Many, many years ago, Spike and I, my husband and I, were stopped by three young men. They stood in front of our car. It was like 11 o'clock at night. We were in a gas station. We came to pull out. And they stood in front of the car. And Spike revved up the engine, like, get out of the way. And they were menacing. And they stayed there. And so Spike did that again, you know, like revved the engine on the car. And the one young man came around the side of the door and opened up the door and yanked Spike out of the car. And all three of them started, the car was still running, and all three of them started beating up Spike. I am screaming at the top of my lungs for them to stop. I get out of the car and run around the driver's side of the car, and I hit one of them. I swing out my arm like a backhand kind of a thing and hit them with my hand in the head. And when I did that, one of the other young men pushed me down on the ground, and they took off running. So nobody had ever done anything like that to me. Nobody ever. I was about 27, 28 years old, and that would have made Spike anywhere between 32 and 33 years old, and he was a rugged man, absolutely rugged, very muscular, but there were three of them, right? And we get back in the car, and he's spitting up blood. They broke his teeth. They smashed his lips. And we drove all the way home, and he's coughing, and every time he coughed, blood would get all over and everything. And I'm like in a zone. I got to be honest with you. I remember sitting there. I can still remember sitting there looking at him and seeing his face swell and watching him keep spitting up this blood. And I literally didn't know what to do, Shell. We get home, and the babysitter was my friend, and she was older than me, and her little boy played with the boys, and she was watching the kids. We walked in. She takes one look at Spike, and she starts crying. She looks at me. I've got bloody knees. My stockings are run, and I broke my pinky when I hit the kid in the head. And so we iced Spike's face and found out that, I mean, he had false teeth because he had false teeth from a football accident when he was real young. And they broke the teeth and rammed the part of the plate up into his gum. So he pulled that out. We iced him, salt watered him, everything, and put ice packs on his face. And he was okay, except we had his teeth fixed. They insisted that Maggie take me to the hospital and make sure that I didn't break my whole hand because my whole hand was swollen. None of the hand, I was worried about Spike once we cleaned him up and I knew he was going to be all right. I was okay. I cried the rest of the night because somebody was mean to us for no reason. That's what hurt me more than anything was the fact that these boys were like, you know, just hurting us for nothing.
Right.
And I couldn't get past that. So imagine if they'd have been friends of mine, like what happened to my grandson. Imagine dealing with that. I thought in the beginning days, I thought about that a lot. I thought about how devastated I was by the fact that somebody just for no good reason, they didn't take money from us, they didn't try to steal the car, they didn't take my jewelry, they didn't do any of that. They just hurt us. Same with Mike. They weren't getting anything for it. It was supposed to be some kind of retribution. But even with that, for what?
Mm-hmm.
For next to nothing, right? And
that's
they were supposed to be people that he butted with, you know, that he was friends with. So when I think about all of that, I think about the fact that that, at the end of the day, is going to last the longest. That hurt is going to last the longest. Now we have a young man who doesn't think anything can hurt him. That's another issue. He's of the mindset that he just can do, you know, whatever, whenever, however. It put him in that kind of a space. Now, I don't know if he might have been that way by the time he was the age he is now anyway, but I doubt it to the extreme that it is. Has trouble staying focused on things. He has trouble remembering what he's supposed to do from minute to minute. I also want to talk about the fact that if somebody is comatose, whether it is deliberate coma to help heal or it's a coma that is induced by your own brain due to swelling and things like that. It's really, really hard for all the connectivity to come back. So some of the connectivity is never the way it's supposed to. It's almost like it runs with a short, so to speak. And one of the first things to be that is subjected to a problem is your short-term memory.
Oh, yeah.
Which
oh, yeah.
is how people follow procedures and how people remember to brush their teeth in the morning and how they remember to put gas in the car and how they remember all those things. That suffers the most and is rarely totally repaired, rarely.
Right, right. Well, and also because of the – it's even more so – when the coma is drug induced, because
right.
it takes a long time for the drugs to come out of the tissues, they get absorbed at the tissues of the body, and they can cause an imbalance in brain function or in other parts of the body, depending on what type of a drug it is, for years and years and years.
Right.
When I had my episode, this was when I was 19. When I had the, I was given drugs that I didn't know, and I had that, I had that experience where I really lost my mind for a couple of hours. The residual of that lasted for years. I kept having flashbacks because, and the doctor told me that when chemicals get in the brain, they can really affect you for up to a decade. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yes.
They can affect
yes.
you. Yep. They can affect you for up to a decade, and sure enough, I had the most intense flashbacks were for the first 2 years, but I was having flashbacks for over a decade, and even to this day, I mean, this is like 30 years later now, every now and then, I will have a flashback. They're very mild. I know how to deal with them now. I actually know how to shut them down. All right, so at least I've developed that ability now to control my mind, and if I feel something starting, I can shut it down now, where in the past I had difficulty with that, you know, when it first happened. But that first 2 years, I suffered almost every day for two solid years with just intense flashbacks, and I couldn't control them. And then over time, they got less and less, and I did learn how to control them during that period. But the fact is that the doctor told me, you know, this is something. There's a lot. That's why a lot of people, when they have, like, a bad trip, they don't
mm-hmm.
recover because
mm-hmm.
what happens to the brain is permanent. You know, mm-hmm. I have to consider myself extremely lucky, regardless of what happened to me. I believe that there was somebody watching over me that protected me because I could have died that night,
mm-hmm.
or I could have not recovered. You know, at least most of my mind came back.
Well,
you know.
I mean, you know, that's debatable in certain circles. You know that. Right?
I knew you couldn't let that go.
I know, I love it when you set me up like that. But, I mean, you know, when you talk about stuff like that, though, Shell, it's like everybody. Some people can, you know, get to another place that's the same level but maybe different. Some people never get to the same level. Some people never try. Some people move on to even greater things because of tragedy like that. And
exactly.
You know, because, again, we're all so different. But I guess a part of me, I brought up this story. I mulled this story because, of course, I read it the first day it happened and kept looking at it and rereading it and thinking, do I want to talk about this? Because it is very close to my heart. But I, you know, I also want to bring to the attention to the good people out there, not the sickos that are out there thinking, you know, geez, I wonder what it would feel like to set somebody on fire. I hope you do it to yourself, not to somebody else. But for the good people that are out there, you know, I think we need to pay attention to what's going on around us and be careful and talk to your kids about people who are not treating them right. When we talk about bullying and all that kind of stuff, if they have somebody, especially if they're not in second grade, they're in high school, and something doesn't seem right to them, please be careful and talk to somebody so that if something like this happens, parents and the authorities will know what door to knock on, stuff like that. Maybe keep a journal. Maybe at the very least, keep a journal so that people know what's going on in your life. Now this poor family, they'll never be able to put it to rest until they know something. We're out of time, though. I want to thank everybody. I see I've been being listened to by my son and my daughter-in-law. I would have given you a heads up that the show was going to be about your son today, but it just kind of turned into that. So everybody go out, though, and have a great day. God bless. It's a good temperature here. I think we're almost as warm here in Michigan as my Florida families. So it's like almost 40 degrees here already this morning. So it's like spring.
Here.
Yeah. See? So it's not much different. So God bless everybody. Go out and have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow with Bullies to Buddies Day. Thanks, Shel. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Renee. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.